At the Commonwealth Policy Foundation, we try to approach the issues of life, marriage, religious liberty, and fiscal integrity from a biblical perspective that promotes thoughtfulness and kindness. We work with political leaders and concerned citizens from all across the state. To stay informed, visit commonwealthmatters.org and sign up for our e-newsletter. The Commonwealth Policy Foundation is a nonprofit organization that only exists because of friends like you. Thanks for tuning in to The Commonwealth Matters.
Welcome to The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson, Executive Director of the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's one of the most divisive and hotly debated topics over the last year, critical race theory. So far, there have been two bills introduced in the Kentucky legislature in the past couple of months that would ban the teaching of critical race theory. Critics say that it infringes on academic freedom. Opponents of CRT says that it divides races and has no place in our public schools. Joining me to discuss further is Representative Jennifer Decker from Shelbyville. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So, Jennifer, it's important that we start with a working definition of critical race theory, and I'm going to call it CRT for short. But according to one definition, and I think it's changing, I've seen different definitions, CRT is the study of institutional racism and how it affects people of color in America. Is that inaccurate? This is the latest definition I heard at a recent forum.
Well, the definition of what we're trying to get at is broader than CRT. So CRT was begun back in its birthday was 1989 during a conference of some legal scholars. And it was looking at the interplay with race policy power and with an effect not only to understand it, but to affect it. But since then, it has grown. It has the whole praxis of it, the putting it into place, the trials, errors, to the extent there is any type of testing, it has broadened to all kinds of social justice theories, such as the white fragility, anti-racism. There's now white studies. There are lots of things, and they're all theories. They've not been tested. They're only affirming the theory. So there are various tenets that are in our bill that are sought to be prohibited. By the way, I'd like to go back just a little bit as well, and I can go through what the tenets that our bill covers. But the bill does not ban the discussion of the tenets that we're going to talk. What it bans is the promotion of them. It bans the school from state-sponsored teaching of them as if they were true. So the First Amendment does give, and our state law allows the students to discuss politics just as they could any other topic. That's fine. They have First Amendment rights. If they want to discuss this, they can. But what can't happen is what's happening now, and that is the teachers teaching it as fact and enforcing the thought that it is the correct theory.
So BR69 is where you're the primary co-sponsor, and this is what you're referring to.
Yes, that's what I'm referring to.
There are two bills, BR60, that's Joe Fisher's bill, and then BR69, this is your and State Representative Matt Lockett's bill. And here are some of the provisions that you're referring to. It would ban the teaching of one race, sex, or religion is inherently superior to another race, sex, or religion. Another thing that it restricts is an individual, by virtue of his or her race, sex, or religion, is inherently racist, sexist, or oppressive. It would ban the teaching of that idea. So that's what
truth.
You're talking about.
As truth.
Which these things are racist things. I mean, as far as the teaching that there's one race superior to another race. Is that not the definition of racism?
I think so. And I think what in your talk about, in your question about what are the teachings are such things as that the history of racism in our country has really defined our country. It is the basis upon which everything is built. It is irredeemable. It cannot be resolved. There is no redemption. Nothing good has happened. that any progress they explain as only promoting, and the only concessions they say that have ever been made, for example, in the Civil Rights Act, were because they were in some way propping up white supremacy. So they discount that more people died in the Civil War to fight slavery than in any other war our country has ever fought. That has no bearing on the fact that America is not systemically racist. So it teaches that we are, and that the white race is what has propagated all of the racism, and that even if you are not individually racist, if you don't disavow and work to repair the damage, reparations, if you're not actively seeking to teach other whites that they should be ashamed and repair this, that you are part of the problem. You are of a race that needs to be atoned for, but you can't be atoned for.
And what I'm hearing there is there's a guilting going on. I had a friend I was having a conversation with about that. Somebody, I don't think they have a racist bone in their body, but they were made to feel guilty if they weren't actively participating in some kind of reparation. This person didn't have a lot of black friends, didn't know where to begin. It's usually typically a introverted, quiet person, but they also didn't appreciate that they were being guilted into this. So there is some guilting, some shaming if you're not actively involved, isn't there?
Yes. One of the questions I often get is, one of the concepts that the bill says cannot be promoted is this idea of guilt and anguish over the fact that you are of this race, this white race. And some people say, so we're never supposed to feel any sorrow or anguish over slavery. That's not what we're saying. I took Black studies in college. I studied Invisible Man. Mm-hmm. I studied Uncle Tom's Cabin. I studied Langston Hughes. And I felt anguish over what happened during that is a normal emotional reaction. We should feel that. We should all banish any racist thought. What this bill seeks to do is, that's not what we're after. We hope our students will study the full history of slavery, et cetera, understand it, and feel that it should have never happened and should never happen again. What we don't want is for the teachers to say, if you are white, this was your privilege has caused this. Your privilege is has allowed you certain ups in society, and you should forego those. You should banish your mind. They are reality, not a theory that you've got white privilege, but a reality that you should be ashamed of. That's what we don't want is the teachers to say that.
And when you think of teachers, and there are a lot of good teachers out there, many that I don't think this is going to cross their mind or that they want to introduce into their classroom. But the last thing you think of as a good teaching technique is guilting or shaming or dividing. Yes. And I think that's what we're talking about when we talk about critical race theory, introducing a theory that one race is responsible as a whole, one entire race is responsible for what happened to another race. And we know that we have had our challenges, and that's probably putting it mildly. We've had racial strife in this country, but I think of how we've corrected the wrongs. We did have a civil war. We did have a civil rights movement. There were efforts at the national level to rectify the wrongs that were done. And in this melting pot that we call the United States of America, every race, every ethnicity, every nation on the face of the earth is represented here. They come here to become Americans. Why? Because there's the rule of law, because they can pursue their God-given calling and create wealth, raise a family, practice their religion. No other nation on the face of the earth does that. And I would submit to you this, Jennifer, that no other nation has races that get along as troubled as our past is, that get along as good as we have. In so many respects, so many nations today, I think even in African nations, where there are different traits and characteristics, where there is some deep racism. We had a genocide about 25 years ago in Rwanda. It was one black race that committed genocide against another black race. It was the Hutus and the Tutsis, and about 1 million died. And it was based on racial differences.
Yes. Richard, people would not, of all ethnicities, all races, would not be clamoring to our shores if we were a systemically racist country. People come here because they know we're not.
Yeah. No, I agree. I want to go back to this bill. There was another interesting aspect. There were 8 points in BR 69.8 says this: meritocracy or traits such as hard work ethic are racist, sexist, or oppressive, or were created by members of a particular race or religion to oppress members of another race or religion. This is kind of segueing off of what we just talked about. People come here for opportunity. They come here for a better life. And that's how you get ahead. You work hard. You apply yourself. You use your skills that God gave you. And you work, don't you? How is that racist to have a work ethic?
In various of these social justice doctrines, there is the thought that all of those thoughts are thoughts perpetuated by the white race to keep themselves in power, and that our supremacy has caused social norms to be accepted in only a certain way. And so that those norms in our society are perpetuated by the norms of the white race. They are not the norms of all races, and therefore they are racist if they are sought after. In fact, so much of what we're talking about is just antithetical to what our country has been built on in positive ways. Like our founding documents, everything that's come out since has been based on the individual being equal in the sight of God. And those concepts are being attacked at every level. Our schools are focusing on equity instead of equality. Mm-hmm. They define it in simplistic terms in so that children could not possibly not see the beauty of equity. They are actively teaching that equality is a horrible thing, in that we give resources equally and sometimes they don't fit. They have a famous quote that is something like, "Equality is giving everyone a pair of shoes. Equity is giving people the shoes that fit," as if that is a clear definition of the differences. And they have a teaching tool that is on the internet. You can find it. And we have found it taught in our schools. We have gotten examples of it. It's a slideshow. They start with three children behind a wall, one being tall. That happens to be the white child. One being medium-sized and one being a very small black person. They're all trying to see over a fence. They have an equal number of books under them, but they can't see if they're not tall enough. And it is the most beautiful little depiction of what they say equality is being given the same set of books. And then they're not enough, though, for one child to look over. And by the end of it, they have distributed the books differently so that the smallest child can look over. And they are teaching that this is the difference in equality and equity, that it's a whitewashing of socialism because they don't teach who paid for those books, what happened when they took a book from one child, why was he willing to give it? Were there any other solutions? Could they have gone around the wall? And my main question is, why didn't they make the child who could see over black? Because would they have redistributed it from him? It's just a whitewashing, simplistic, non-critical look at socialism and equity versus equality. And that's the kind of thing they're teaching.
You know, I think of the younger generation that really doesn't understand what kind of government we have, the freedoms that we have that come from a democratic republic, that come from the ideal in the Declaration of Independence, that there's a creator who endows us with rights, inalienable rights. And then if you read further, the phrase limits government. The purpose of government is to secure our inalienable rights. I wonder, we're missing out a generation, several generations, I think, are missing out on what makes America unique. The idea that we have limited government, maximum opportunity for individuals to pursue limited government in order to free us to pursue our God-given calling. Socialism is uplifted. I just did a commentary earlier today, Jennifer, on Cuba. The Cuban people are protesting in the streets because they've had it. Communism has failed. Socialism has failed. It promises big. We're going to give you free health care, free education. If you need housing or a job, we'll provide that for you. They promise big, but they always deliver short. And in order to achieve their ends, they've got to oppress people.
They have to use the force of government.
Absolutely. And we're seeing the force of government when we talk about the promotion of CRT, which I want to get to something that you said in a recent column. You talk about CRT having racist roots, Marxist roots, racist roots as well. But it's rooted in Marxism, where there's this class of oppressor and oppressed, and government can come in and rectify the situation. Is that something that you can expand on? This is a column you wrote maybe a month ago or so.
Well, what I meant by that is this all began, as I said, in 1989, but it had predecessors in that there is a thought called critical theory. Critical theory is a school of thought that began in the Frankfurt School in Germany, and it studied Marxism and actually Freudism. And the thoughts were that they were studying how they could use the uniting of oppressed people to bring about a different form of government. And so those thoughts were brought to America, to Columbia. And the people who came up with critical race theory studied that. And in America, you cannot use class warfare because we change classes. We move through classes. Mm-hmm. So instead of having that, it needed to be a struggle, an inherent struggle among people. So racism was, the original scholar, Derrick Bell, was black, and he saw parallels with the bourgeoisie and the proletariat and whites and blacks. Mm-hmm. So it has those thoughts from the critical school that influenced the critical race theory, which has influenced. So it is a struggle between two groups for power in a country, and they are aggrieved. One is an oppressive group, and one is oppressed.
Very good. We can come back to that in just a minute. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, also, I want to hear about a debate that you had with a University of Louisville law professor yesterday. So if you're tuning in, you're watching The Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson here with State Representative Jennifer Decker. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, Richard Nelson here with the Commonwealth Policy Center. It's clear that we're living in confusing and challenging times where law and culture are increasingly hostile to Christian values. So how do you maintain your faith and convictions? That's a question that we're helping to answer at our Christianity and Culture conferences. The goal is to help believers to understand the culture and how to respond in an effective and winsome way. And we'd love for you to join us. The first two were well received, and we look forward to seeing you at our fall conferences in Bowling Green, Paducah, and in Somerset. To find out more, go to CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org. That's CommonwealthPolicyCenter.org, and we look forward to seeing you there.
Welcome back to the Commonwealth Matters. I'm Richard Nelson with the Commonwealth Policy Center, here with State Representative Jennifer Decker, and we are talking about critical race theory. This is the third program, Representative Decker, that I've done on this topic in the last 6 weeks. The reason why is because it's an important issue. We're hearing a lot of people across Kentucky weigh in on it. They're trying to learn more about it. And you have taken the lead on it. You have written a column. You're the primary co-sponsor of a bill that would ban the teaching of CRT in the public schools. And you also recently debated a University of Louisville law professor yesterday, in fact, Cedric Powell. Tell us more about that debate.
Well, I would like to say that Representative Matt Lockett is the lead on this, and he's doing a great job.
I'm very thankful that he
has allowed me to work with him. Yes, I was invited to the Louisville Forum yesterday, and I debated Cedric Powell. He is a professor of law at the Brandeis School of Law, and I would say, I felt good about the discussion. The Louisville Forum is not known as a hotbed of conservatism. Mm-hmm. I don't think there was not a majority of people in the room who agreed with me, but they were very courteous, very nice. I hoped some people listened.
What were the strong arguments, if I could ask, of the opposition of Professor Brown?
Professor Powell?
Powell, I'm sorry. Professor Powell.
He... He denies that this is a racist theory. He believes, you know, I think mostly he and others who talk about our bill and the whole concept is they maintain that critical race theory is just the full teaching of history, and that those of us who don't want this theory taught don't want history taught. And that is, he kept going back to that, that somehow we were trying to whitewash history, which just could not be farther from the truth. It is the main thing that people opposed to our bill say is that we are trying to put a gag on talking about race. And I kept reiterating that is not what this bill is about. It is about state-sponsored support for that theory. No debate. And I've talked about in probably the article you read and yesterday about how critical race theory is not even an epistemological model that we have ever in our country followed where you cannot question. In America, we have a very small L liberal philosophy about knowledge, and that is if you have a theory, you put it out there, you debate it, you falsify anything about it to get to truth. But in critical race theory, it's taught as truth, and if you question it after the progeny, you then are fragile, and you may not question it.
To your point, Jennifer, the authors of a book called White Fragility, they say that critical race theorists, claim that those who object to CRT, another time in my words, do so because even the mere suggestion that being white has meaning often triggers a range of defensive responses. I want to stop right there. If I suggest to you that because you're white, that has there's meaning to that, looking at that through the grid instead of the grid of the Declaration, where we're endowed by by a creator, endowed with equal rights, inalienable rights. There's two different grids that we look at an objective fact, and there's two different outcomes. If I look at you just as a white person, and because of that, maybe you have privilege or, I don't know, you're in the majority class, and therefore you are responsible for keeping others down, that's going to be very different than this idea that as Americans, we are created in the image of God. We have equal dignity and equal value, and we can come here and make something of ourselves.
Yes.
Two very different grids by which we look at reality. I would suggest, I'm going to go ahead and say this, that the authors, and again, in White Fragility, say this, that the defensive responses, anger, fear, guilt, and behavior such as argumentation, silence, and withdrawal from the stress-inducing situation. You know, of course, if I'm going to be called racist, I'm not going to be very happy. I'm guessing the same is
well,
for you
it
too.
Just it's it just that Robin DiAngelo wrote that book and it just silenced all critics of CRT. No one wants to be called that, so they will not speak up. It has become by default accepted because people and the irony of that to me is because the reason it works is because no one wants to be racist. We are not racist. It is offensive to be called that. We will do anything aside. We will allow our country to be dismantled because we do not want to stand up and say that is false because they will label you then as a racist. So it is a pretty effective tool, actually, unless people understand it and speak out.
I agree. White privilege. This is something we hear of quite a bit. How would you define white privilege, or as those who CRT advocates? How would we define that? It's a term that's thrown around.
They define it by saying that since the founding of our nation, everything that's happened, every law that's been written, every decision that's been made has been to protect white supremacy, and that because of that, our legal system, our religion, they say that Christianity was brought about to the slaves to make them docile. And that was because of white supremacy that we introduced it for that purpose. Everything, our schools, everything has propped up the white race. So it has, because all of that has happened, it has given us privileges that even if you were born on a dirt farm, the fact that you were white gave you a privilege because the world would look at you differently. So if you, it's just the matter of your skin has caused you to be an oppressor.
You were criticized by the state's largest newspaper after you introduced your bill. They printed a caricature of you and your colleagues, Representative Joe Fisher and Representative Matt Lockett, and the title of this cartoon, whatever you want to call it, called you hypocritical racist. Were you surprised?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I expected it because I've known from early days of schooling that when you have nothing really intelligent to add, you just call names.
Yeah.
And the slur of the opposition to our bills, that is what they would call you as a racist. I knew it was coming. It will come more. I will be called that again.
What are you hearing from people across the state, Jennifer? What, are people applauding you? Are they criticizing you? What's the tenor?
I would say that out of the emails I've received, probably 100 to 1 in favor and praying for me, thanking me for having courage. It's the second largest thing I receive email about, and it's almost all positive.
Good. Back in May, Kentucky's Attorney General Daniel Cameron joined 19 other state's attorney generals, and they formally requested Education Secretary Miguel Cardona to reconsider a proposal to prioritize the teaching of CRT through federal grant programs. Have you gotten input from the Attorney General or from any other legal counsel as to the legality?
Well, I am a lawyer, okay, and I've read the letter that he signed, and I've also studied the opinion given by the Montana Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And the strongest argument against this is, and I am firmly convinced that before this is over, it will go to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And what I believe is the teaching of this in our schools creates a hostile learning environment. You cannot promote these thoughts without causing feelings of being attacked, both to the people, the oppressors, the oppressed. It does not equal protection of the law to sit in a classroom that teaches you that you are perpetually oppressed. So I believe by the end, it's going to be declared unconstitutional to teach this at all in a classroom.
Jennifer Decker, I wish we had more time to talk about it. Thank you so much for taking a stand and leading on this issue. God bless you.